President Kennedy issued on March 1st an executive order creating a Peace Corps. He also sent a special message to Congress recommending the creation of a permanent Peace Corps. Now, what is this proposal which has aroused so much interest and so much enthusiasm among our people? It is based on a study which was ordered by Congress last year. This study was made by a private research group of the Colorado State University Research Foundation. And after making a study of the project, it endorsed the project as advisable and practical. And it also found a high degree of receptivity among the underdeveloped countries which were questioned about this proposal, which of course would greatly affect them. The President, in recommending the project to Congress, outlined its scope and purpose. He said, "Throughout the world, the people of the newly developing nations are struggling for economic and social progress, which reflects their deepest desires. Our own freedom and the future of freedom around the world depend in a very real sense on their ability to build growing and independent nations where men can live in dignity, liberated from the bonds of hunger, ignorance, and poverty. One of the greatest obstacles to the achievement of this goal is the lack of trained men and women with the skill to teach the young and assist in the operation of development projects. Men and women with the capacity to cope with the demands of swiftly evolving economies and with the dedication to put that capacity to work in the villages, the mountains, the towns, and the factories of dozens of struggling nations. The vast task of economic development urgently requires skilled people to do the work of the society, to help teach in the schools, construct development projects, demonstrate modern methods of sanitation in the villages, and perform 100 other tasks calling for training and advanced knowledge. To meet this urgent need for skilled manpower, we are proposing the establishment of a Peace Corps, an organization which will recruit and train American volunteers, sending them abroad to work with the people of other nations. Among the specific programs to which Peace Corps members can contribute are teaching in primary and secondary schools, especially as part of national English language teaching programs, participation in the worldwide program of malaria eradication, instruction and operation of public health and sanitation projects, aiding in village development through school construction and other programs, increasing rural agricultural productivity by assisting local farmers to use modern implements and techniques. The initial emphasis of these programs will be on teaching, Thus, the Peace Corps members will be an effective means of implementing the development programs of the host countries, programs which our technical assistance operations have helped to formulate. The Peace Corps will not be limited to the young or to college graduates. All Americans who are qualified will be welcomed to join this effort. But undoubtedly, the Corps will be made up primarily of young people as they complete their formal education. Now, there is certainly light and vision to this proposal. It is bold, new, fresh, and exciting. No wonder that it has aroused so much enthusiasm and eager inquiries among our young people. To be sure, not all of our young men and women are idealists. But there are enough of them in our country and in every other country for that matter, who are possessed of aspirations, generous impulses, who are eager for new horizons and new frontiers, which, if properly aroused and directed, these impulses and these aspirations, may yet redeem our sorry world. I'm afraid that too much rust has settled in the souls of too many of us. We have become weighted down with too much history, and our yesterdays leave no room for a new tomorrow. Our unsatisfactory international experiences of the past have yielded us little wisdom and less faith. Democracy, I'm afraid, has let its fires die down. We have been engaged in recent years, not really in crusading for the freedom of the peoples of the world, in Asia, Africa, or Latin America. We have been scampering about for military alliances, and we have exercised little discretion in our choices of allies, in our choice of those for whom we poured out our bounty and our largesse. Franco, and Tito, and Syngman Rhee, and Chiang Kai-shek, and dictators in Latin America and in other parts of the world. Of course, we never abandoned our democratic slogans, and our radio propaganda for a free Europe or a free world. But our foreign policy reflected not the passion and initiative of a confident, advancing democratic faith, but rather the doubts and the fears and the skepticism of a tired and weary and disillusioned political system on the defensive behind a Maginot Line. Our people have been constantly called upon to seek ever greater security against a menacing foe. But we have been rarely summoned and challenged to go out into the highways and byways of the world seeking peace and freedom and justice and pursuing them, working for them. Now, of course, it is not we alone who have been at fault, or our allies in the free world. The Soviet Communist bloc has been even more culpable. prating about peace incessantly and the evils of colonialism, but doing very little about it. The Peace Corps proposal is a new note. It is a clarion call to men to come to the aid of their fellow men in need of that aid in other parts of the world, bypassing all politics, all ideologies, bypassing the Cold War. Not to destroy communism, nor to save democracy, only to help other human beings, men, women, and children, the underprivileged of the earth, the timeless victims of ignorance and disease and poverty, help them to help themselves. What a noble call that is to the human spirit. And how truly responsive it is to the best in our proud American tradition. Someone has said recently in my hearing here that the Peace Corps proposal represents our first truly generous act in the last 10 years. I cannot go along with that. Our government, representing the true sentiments and desires of the American people, has not only in the last 10 years, but in the last 20 years and more, poured out its resources in a most generous way and sent vast and unprecedented material and financial aid to peoples in all parts of the world. First came UNRWA, the foreign aid program, to which we contributed nearly $3,000 million, 70% of the total. And we contributed also the administrative leadership to help relieve hunger and distress in post-war Europe after World War II. Then came the Marshall Plan in 1948, which Winston Churchill called the most unsordid act in human history. The Marshall Plan, during the years of its operation, spent approximately $5,000 million a year to rehabilitate the Western world. And it was responsible, by common consent, it was responsible for the economic recovery of Europe. Since 1945, our country has spent in foreign aid, the bulk of it in the form of direct grants, nearly $70,000 million. $70 billion. No, our government and our people cannot be charged with lack of generosity or with selfishness or with niggardliness. What unfortunately dimmed the luster of our generosity and cast doubts upon our motives was the fact that since 1950, the bulk of our foreign aid was no longer economic in nature, but military. Ever since, we came to the military assistance of Greece and Turkey. And ever since the Korean War, the aid which we extended to foreign governments has been largely for military defense, for strengthening the military potentials of those countries whom we sought to win or to keep within our military political orbit. so that our generosity took on a definite political and military complexion. It became an integral part of our political-military strategy in the Cold War. Thus, while our economic aid as such was never discontinued, and our technical assistance programs were in fact expanded, the world did not fail to note that our contributions for military and defense purposes far exceeded our contributions for development programs and technical assistance, so that our entire foreign aid program was vitiated, even in the eyes of peoples who were the beneficiaries of our generosity. And so we won neither their gratitude nor their respect, rather their suspicion and distrust, and at times, even their hate. We were too eager, we were too anxious to get the underdeveloped countries on our side, to get them politically committed to us, instead of waiting until our disinterested acts of humanity and helpfulness would slowly ripen into a harvest of goodwill and friendship. Now, I, for one, am not so anxious for the goodwill of nations, if that goodwill must be purchased with money and bribes. I am far more concerned that we as a nation do the right and decent things at all times. You cannot buy friendship. You may win it by the example of your life and by the clear and transparent motives of your actions. You may recall that when the violently protesting Missouri Committee of 70 called upon Abraham Lincoln in 1864 and presented him with a list of their grievances and their criticisms sharply aimed at Abraham Lincoln himself, he replied, "I desire so to conduct the affairs of this administration that if at the end, when I come to lay down the reins of power, I have lost every other friend on earth, I shall at least have one friend left, and that friend shall be down inside of me." I am afraid that in our foreign relations we have lost friends because we have not been a friend deep down inside of ourselves, a friend to our own historic ideals and traditions and genius. Now, the Peace Corps idea represents a return to brotherhood for its own sake. Americans are being summoned in the name of a spiritual mandate as old as the Bible. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, and if thy brother wax poor, thou shalt surely help him. Americans are being summoned to volunteer for a vital, non-political mission in foreign lands, to give 2 or 3 years of their lives and all their dedication, without compensation, except as an unselfish act brings its own incalculable rewards. They are being asked to face, if need be, hardships and discomforts, just in order to share their education, their technical know-how, their knowledge and experience of a more advanced culture with peoples who are groping their way out of the darkness of the ages towards the light of a better day. Now, we have frequently sent our youth, we have frequently sent our young people to battlefields to fight with weapons of death. We frequently sent many of them to die for goals which were seldom attained. Here is a call to our young people to wage the battles of humanity with weapons of peace, to bring the gifts of their minds and their hearts and their hands to quicken and brighten the lives of fellow human beings. Now, the Peace Corps, of course, is an experiment, untried, unprecedented. It has its risks. It may not succeed. The president himself has said that this is a new dimension in our overseas program, and only the most careful planning and negotiations can ensure its success. Now, some people, prompted by I know not what, perhaps by political partisanship, some people have already begun to snipe at the project, although it has just started as on a pilot basis. But even the warmest well-wishers of the project are cautioning against undue haste and urging the most thoroughgoing preparation, the most careful selection, training, and supervision of those who will volunteer for the Peace Corps. Everyone must realize that this is not an opportunity for young people pleasantly to spend their salad days in glamorous foreign lands. President Kennedy himself has cautioned, Peace Corps members will often serve on the conditions of physical hardships, living under primitive conditions. And for every Peace Corps member, service will mean a great financial sacrifice. This service will make large drafts not only upon talent and skill and ability, but especially upon character. Now, if this project does not succeed, it will be one of those generous mistakes to which, as a sage once said, the world is beholden for the greatest part of the good that is done in it. Financially, such a failure would be far less costly than one of our billion-dollar military airfields and installations which we built in this or that country abroad, and which we were then forced to abandon at the insistence of the government of that country. In his Pilgrim Progress, John Bunyan tells of a castle called Doubting Castle, the owner whereof was Giant Despair. I ask myself, can a democracy like ours afford today to become the owner of Doubting Castle and halt its progress to the city of God, to the great tomorrow, out of fear or out of despair. If successful, the Peace Corps idea may point the way for intensifying international action to utilize the vast reservoirs of human idealism and the readily available manpower in a determined war upon poverty and disease and ignorance and hunger, which are the lot of two-thirds of mankind. In my judgment, this project should really be international, not national in character, and should be channeled through the United Nations, as should all our foreign aid. The urgent task of tomorrow is not to make the United States strong. It is strong enough in a military sense. It will never be stronger, for the Soviet is steadily running a very close race of armament with us. The more we build, the more they build. The task of tomorrow is to make the United Nations strong, so that our military strength will never have to be employed in a global all-destroying war, nor the strength of any other people. So that whatever projects and programs of an international character are centered in the United Nations, they add to its prestige and to its authority, and ultimately to the pacification and the peace of the world. I am hoping that our Peace Corps project will become a pilot project for the world. And President Kennedy himself expressed this hope. He said, although this is an American Peace Corps, the problem of world development is not just an American problem. Let us hope that other nations will mobilize the spirit and energies and skill of their people in some form of Peace Corps, making our own effort only one step in a major international effort to increase the welfare of all men and improve understanding among nations. If this ever really comes to be, it may well prove to be the dawn of great new beginnings for mankind. And later ages will be able to say, bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, but to be young was very heaven. With a dynamic idea like the Peace Corps, we are getting back in step with the future. We are beginning to keep time with the hopes of the world. We are teaching our youth to mount up as eagles, and our own nation to renew its days as of old. And when these young people, after 2 or 3 years of foreign service, will come back home, think what they will bring back to us of knowledge, of maturity, of information about the rest of the world. Think what leadership they will be able to give our own people after having received this university training, this super postgraduate training in human helpfulness. My dear friends, a prophet of Israel once said, Let your old men dream dreams. Let your young men see visions. This Peace Corps, I pray, may help our young men and women again to see the redeeming visions of mankind.